Welcome back to In the Moat with Cylinder Moats. I hope everybody's having a great day. I know it's stressful out there with the COVID-19 expanding exponentially and people holed up in their homes dealing with lots of family drama if you have family around, lots of financial stress and society stress. But today I want to cover something personal, something dramatic, something people might find slightly offensive because it covers topics that include child abuse, bullying, prison, assault and battery, and just fear. So if this sets you off or could possibly trigger you, please feel free to skip this episode, and I apologize if you find it so. It's just I want to discuss this, and it's my podcast, so here we go. Over the years, during my tragic childhood and upbringing, my dad was a very, very dramatic figure in my youth. He either wasn't there, or he was just a horrific phantom nightmare terrorizing everyone around me. So I like to call the stories I tell about my childhood moments. So the first moment is about to start. And then I'll come back to you for a little bit, and then I'll go into the second one. They are very interwoven, very interconnected, even though they are separate by at least 12 years' time. So, enjoy if you can. A moment. 1985. A single sliver of dim white light pierced the darkness around me as I huddled, clenching my bony knees to my chest on the floor of my closet. In fear, I hoped and prayed that he would not look here, that I would be safe in this private sanctuary from the giant man's wrath. In the distance, I could hear him shouting, my mother's screams, my brother's begging and pleading not to be punished. A sudden silence fell, and my fear grew into panic. I leaned forward onto my knees and peered through the crack, unable to see much beyond the bedroom door, which stood ajar. Some deeper part of me cursed my stupidity for not having closed that door. Wrapping my fingers around the aluminum facing of the closet door, I clenched them tightly to keep the door closed in case anyone happened to find my hiding place. Running steps came up the hallway, and my brother burst into the room. His eyes were red, streaked with terrified tears. The rapid pulse of his panicked heartbeat could be seen throbbing on his neck. Jason looked around, under the bed, then straight at me. "There you are!" My fingers were beginning to ache as I put all my effort into holding the door shut. He was not going to invade my sanctuary. Jason pulled on the doorknobs, and my grip strained. The pain grew to a point where I thought he would break my hand off. But somehow, no matter how much he yanked, jerked, and strained, I kept my grip and kept him out.
"Let me in, Jer! He's coming!" "No, no, 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 no! Come on, I need a place to hide!" "No, this is my place! You can't come in here!"
"Damn it, Jer!" he swore and ran out of the room. I retained my firm grip as my fingers grew more numb from the strain, my focus glued on the now wide-open bedroom door. I sat in fright, praying that I would not be found by the man who would whip me, punch me, beat me until I bled again so that I could not sit down for hours. It all started when Dad decided to take a nap after guzzling a six-pack of beer and smoking a couple of joints. He liked to get stoned before lunch, and it always made him sleepy. He was able to sleep through shouting and loud shows on TV, but he became a horrible monster when things got quiet and someone tried to keep from waking him up. Dad would be up like a flash if he heard someone whispering in the next room, his rage unstoppable until every person in his path was bruised, bleeding, and broken. It did not matter age or gender. If you were within his sight, you were the enemy to be taken out and destroyed. So Dad fell asleep, a joint between two fingers and a half-drunk beer in his right hand, tipping slightly as he snored. Mom had taken the beer and joint, placing them carefully within his reach on the end table next to him. Lovingly, she covered him with one of Granny's hand-crocheted afghans and propped his feet up on the footrest. After a while, the phone rang. Mom answered it and started whispering so she would not wake the sleeping giant. What I did not know at the time was that Dad was not just stoned on pot. None of his children were aware that he also had a vial in his hip pocket filled with cocaine. So when Mom started whispering on the phone, Dad was up and roaring, high as a kite and paranoid as hell. His temper unleashed, he set out to destroy all enemies. When I saw him clamber to his feet, I ran from my place on the couch, mere inches from my father, yet still unnoticed, tore up the stairs and into my bedroom and slid the closet door shut. A single sliver of dim white light pierced the darkness around me, and I could no longer feel my fingers. I could see them in my dim light adjusted vision, and they were still holding tight to the facing. My mother's voice came tearing up the hallway, echoing in a scream the likes of which I have never heard before or since. My eyes burst open with tears and devoted fear at what my father was doing to my mother. A lump grew in my throat to the point where I was having great difficulty breathing, which was good because a shadow crossed in front of the doorway to my bedroom. He was standing in the hallway, one fist dripping blood, the other clenched tightly around his belt, that belt, the belt I had felt so many times tearing into my flesh. His head turned. He looked directly at me. My gaze locked on his. And I squelched a scream into a mild gulp that to me seemed loud and ominous, but went apparently unheard to the beast as he broke the stair, glanced around the open doorway, and continued walking past it. A warmth pierced the numb coldness of my hands, and I looked down to see something black and wet on my fingertips. As my eyes readjusted to the dim light, I saw that it was my own blood. I passed out. And when I awoke, I was being carried in a run by my mother to the car. She tossed me in the back seat, and only then did I notice she had gauze wrapped around her head, red-stained near her mouth. My own fingers were wrapped in gauze, and my shirt and pants were covered in drops of blood. I could only wonder if it was my blood or hers. At the hospital, they put some sticky goop on my hands and wrapped my fingers back up.
Where's my mommy?
She's here. The doctors are taking a look at her. Don't worry, she'll be all right. You both will.
But I want my mommy!
What's your name?
Jer.
Well, Jer, your mommy got hurt. Can you tell me if you know how she got hurt?
My silence was filled with the horror of what Dad would do to me if I told on him.
It's okay to tell me. I'm a doctor and I can help you. Fine. We'll see how your mommy is doing.
Is JJ here?
Is JJ your dad?
My look of derision was blatant and pointedly accusing the man of being foolish.
No, he's my brother.
Your mommy only brought you with her. Can you tell me how you hurt your fingers?
I decided to tell a half-truth.
Playing hide-and-seek, I hid in the closet and held the door closed.
I see.
The man stood and left the room.
That's the end of the first moment. That was when Mom decided she made a horrible mistake, bringing Dad back into our lives. After all the moving around we did, after all the pain and suffering, she decided enough was enough. Rescued us, brought us to Galesburg. We stayed in the rescue mission, ironically, which would later be my home for a little while when I was homeless, but that's a different story. And then we moved back in with Granny in her basement for a little while, and then Mom moved into the projects. All during that time, Dad was literally hunting us. He was hunting for us, trying to drag us back into that horrible situation where he could continue to abuse and harass us. But Mom went to the police, had him arrested. He went to prison. And I begged and pleaded to give my side of the story during the court case, but Mom said that the only one who could talk was her and my sister. And that's what happened. So he went to prison. And that sets up the next one. It's 12 years later. I obviously grew a lot. I matured. I got educated. I went to college. And then I got rescued by somebody I fell in love with at college. And she brought me to the Chicago area, where I live now. After moving up to the Chicago area, I asked my mom where my father was, because I was curious about, now as an adult myself, with education and intellect and perception of all of the weird human personality types and odd inflections and expressions, who my father actually was as a human being, instead of a menace from my youth, who I really never knew, other than someone who took us out for ice cream and then beat us half to death for the smallest things. So I reached out, and here's the next moment, 12 years later. It's all my fault.
You shouldn't have come.
My father sat before me in a wheelchair, burrowing obstinate eyes beneath the facade of injured exhaustion into an unfamiliar young man standing in the doorway. The last time he'd seen me was through tears, mine, not his, of terror, while Mom tore us away from his narcotic wrath 12 years ago. Hi. Dad.
I see your mother in you.
The face I had long forgotten. Now a vision, alighting the phoenix ashes of faded nightmares laced with innocent joy. A tragic, burning lump rose in my throat. I almost didn't come.
Damn glad you did. They had me up before dawn. Shaved, haircut, bathed, perfumed. The ladies in this joint are gonna love me tonight.
The humor was lost on my somber mind. I pulled a chair from the opposite side of the table and sat near him. We were in a visiting room, walked behind an endless series of security gates in the heart of Stateville Prison.
Had me on death watch till last month. No reason to live anymore. I was ready to go. Then I got your letter.
The lump rose higher, grew like it was trying to recreate my second death at age 2. When epiglottitis inflamed my throat, I suffocated and died for 2 minutes.
It's like reading a book when I open your letters. You always were artistic.
No, Dad, that's Jay. My big brother drew on every piece of paper he found. Cars, Mack trucks, hot rods, all in full detail and covered with flames. Me? I just observed everything. Soaked it in like a black hole and kept it there. A core of infinite matter and energy, never to be released.
Well, you look good, son.
The lump in my throat lessened. Nerves began to ease with the nightmare in the room. A phantom presence now distilled by a stroke. Paralysis on his left side. Multiple heart attacks. And a mosaic of stab wound scars on his chest, back, and arms. Prison isn't a nice place for a man who abused innocent little boys and girls. My eyes drifted to his shirt, green and blue plaid on white, silver-rimmed opal snaps, just like the one I wore as a child daily, thinking the pearlescent snaps to be magic shields that could protect me from bullies at school. Only Jay did that. He was suspended every time, but finally made an impression when he held a bully against the brick wall of our elementary school. This is my fist. Jay slammed his hand full speed into the brick wall, his knuckles releasing a horrible. He showed no pain, although I could see a shocked look of agony in his eyes from my proximity, curled in a ball on the ground, wind knocked out of me. Jay pulled back his bloody, lacerated hand. This is your face next time. Now leave my brother alone. When he got home from the hospital, Dad was stoned and drunk like usual, and not taking any more fighting, unless it was him doing the fighting. The next day at school, Jay had a tough time sitting. No one saw the blood-red welts Dad had added to his colorful markings. For years, this man had been a phantom, his name an insult in our house. And a mystery to me as to why he got 25 years for hitting his wife and beating his children. As he spoke, I began to notice my father had a habit of blinking faster when something came up that seemed a little far-fetched to me. It was a tell. He was lying. Dad had always been a pathological liar, but his charm and Elvis Presley looks helped him get away with most deceptions and fabrications. As an adult, I could now see his flaws, his humanity. An hour had passed when a guard entered the room.
Wrap it up, 5 minutes.
With a bear hug that embodied all the pain, anger, resentment, and insecurity of 12 years not knowing my father. I left him sitting there and worked my way through endless guard stations to the free world. I drove home in a haze, relieved to have finally faced the demon from my past. It was 1 year later when my mother called.
Jer, your dad's coming home.
After my visit with Dad, Mom had asked me how he was. I told her everything. Apparently, she followed my visit with her own. Facing the man she'd fallen madly in love with 22 years previously, she had seduced and married him, bore 4 children, and suffered at his brutal hands for years. In 1985, she had finally had enough. That was the beginning. But now, at the ending, 12 years on, Mom was curious to see if the young man she fell in love with still existed beneath the damaged old husk behind prison walls. Apparently he did. Dad came home, and despite all of the discouragement from every member of our family, Mom married him again. My father spent the rest of his life with a cigarette between his lips and cancer growing in his lungs. It moved to his bladder and nailed him. He died peacefully in his own bed, in a house Mom had bought on Main Street in his hometown. Those final years were a bonus level for a villain who had already been brought down. Dad lived to make up for the dozen years lost. He became a part of his family once again. My father had lost everything, given up, lay in bed on death watch behind prison walls. Then my letter came, and he sat up, found his spirit and will to live again. And boy, did he live. And it's all my fault. All right, so that's it for that one. It's very emotional material, and anyone who has listened all the way through, I appreciate your time. This is the history of me. This is what fuels my personality and my drive to be better, to be kinder, gentler, and more generous, as well as more frugal with my own lifestyle and choices. With the assistance of various different teachers over the years and different people who have mentored me, as surrogate father figures, so to speak, I'm not quite a man's man, and I don't get it when people are man's men. I just don't understand that. I don't like sports. I don't like, you know, gazing at cars. I don't tease members of the opposite gender or even the same gender due to their looks or their choices of clothing. I just don't see it. I don't understand it. I taught myself how to shave, how to do everything with the assistance of a few people here and there. And I acknowledge them all the time on Facebook and social media where I am friends with them. Whether or not I see them ever again, but, you know, that's the millennia we're living in now, where we have 1,000 or so friends, and half of them we've never met, and probably never will meet in person. At the same time, this drama that I suffered, this tragedy that I suffered, the post-traumatic stress that I endured, has led to various different problems over the years. I've actually been diagnosed as bipolar level 2, which is a direct result of the abuse, mental and physical, that I endured in my childhood. I was on medication for a while. Unfortunately, it was the wrong medication. However, the medication did allow me to see what I was saying and doing that really upset people, which I still, to this day, don't understand how or why it upsets people, but I understand that it does upset people. It isn't sociopathic, it's just, these are things I never learned. Certain taboo topics that you don't talk about, like I discussed in this podcast right now. Some people find this material offensive, and I'm sorry, but this is reality, this is truth. And that's what In the Moat is all about, just telling the truth and observing reality and commenting on it from my perspective as someone who endured all this stuff that I've discussed now. Anyway, I'm not trying to upset anybody. I don't want anybody upset at me. It's just this is what fuels my personality. This is the background that I base my reality upon and how I judge and view people, because the personality of my father that was ingrained into me, that all of his darkness, all of his savagery, all of his evil, all of his manipulation, all of his lies and pathology are in my head, because that's what he taught me. But other people in school, my peers, my mentors, my advisors, my mother, my grandfather, and especially a couple of key teachers in high school, helped me to recognize how I can be better
And it's in my nature to, as I said, keep everything inside. Like a bicole. I just keep it bottled up. But with my series of poetry books that I published, that I'm still publishing, and now this podcast, I'm just trying to trickle out little pieces of it so that you aren't overwhelmed. And that's it. I really don't know what else to say. And I hope those of you who enjoy this type of content will contribute. This is the first episode I'm going to actually have contributions on. I wanted to get the first couple out just so that, you know, people could get a taste without having to worry about advertising. Even though I think I slipped in a little bit of advertising for, you know, our host here. Anchor.fm. So that's it for this episode of In the Moat. I'm Zoander Moats, and I look forward to discussing politics legitimately next time. Or something of that nature. I hope everyone is safe and healthy. And for those of you who are going through the tragic consequences of the neglect that our current political system is just pervading our society with, you have my sympathies and my best wishes.